It's been almost 10 days since the Ontario Provincial Police tried and failed to forcibly take down the Six Nations blockade in Caledonia, Ontario. 2 months since the barricades went up. The Six Nations demonstrators want to stop a planned housing development at Douglas Park Estates. Six Nations representatives are currently in negotiations with the federal and Ontario governments. Cynthia Wesley Esquima is an associate professor of Aboriginal Studies at the University of Toronto. She also teaches political science and history at Laurentian University in Barrie. She lives on Chippewa Georgina Island First Nation, and she joins me now by phone from Phoenix, where she's attending the Indigenous Knowledge Conference. Hello, Cynthia, and welcome to Red Eye.
Hi, good morning.
What has been the ownership history of the disputed land?
What has been the ownership history? Well, the lands transfer. Apparently, let me just back up a bit. Apparently, the lands were surrendered legally, but then again, you know, that's always the question: is what does legally mean? You know, was it done under duress, or was the Community Act actually involved in this? There's a number of acreage in Six Nations that are under land claim at this present moment, and that land was included in that package. So there's obviously a dispute as to whether or not it was legally surrendered to the government, although the sale of this land happened in 1987.
And what is the status of the ongoing land claim now?
Well, as far as I know, what's going on right now is they've probably finished the protocols in terms of who's going to be sitting at the negotiation table having the discussion around what happens with this particular parcel of land. But other land claims will, of course, be ongoing, until there's some resolution on this particular parcel. But in terms of, I think everything has now been suspended. I think one of the things that the Confederacy Chiefs asked for was a moratorium on any other development or any other kind of activity on this land until they sat down at the negotiation table and hammered out an arrangement for negotiation.
And has the federal government been moving at all on the claim?
Well, they're not going to be able to do anything in terms of moving it until they actually decide how they're going to move it. They have been at the table. The province has also been at the table. And as I understand it from a member from Six Nations that is also attending the conference, it's just the Confederacy Chiefs that are at the table. I had understood that the elected council was also represented there, but apparently they're not. And that's an interesting development.
Yeah, that is interesting. Maybe we can come back to that in a minute. But tell us a little bit, what land is under dispute?
What land in all of Six Nations?
Just
in terms of the Caledonia parcel.
In terms of the Caledonia parcel, can you describe the land that's under dispute?
Yeah, there's 100 acres that were apparently legally surrendered in the late 1800s. And then were sold in 1987, I believe it was 1987, to developers. And that's the piece. That's 100 acres. So it's not a very, that's a lot of land, of course, but it's not that large a piece of a land in the context of the overall land claims at the Grand River. The Grand River has something like 600,000 acres of land that's in dispute.
And in terms of the current blockades, how was the decision made to put up the blockade in Caledonia?
I think that the decision was made, as I understood it, by the Confederacy to prevent the further development of land. And I understand why they would do that. I mean, they have land under dispute. They want to have these land claims addressed properly and resolved. So, you need to understand that for First Nations, if that land had been developed, it had continued to be developed, we understand that once we give an inch, everybody takes a mile. So there would be no, once the land was developed, there would be no returning that land to the, returning it to the status of the Six Nations community. So they had, that was the reason, I think, the decision that was made to stop it at that point, because one house had been built, and that was it.
And the negotiations that are now ongoing with the representatives of the federal and provincial governments, who is representing the Six Nations people? Is it an elected council or hereditary chiefs?
No, it's the hereditary. The hereditary chiefs are the ones. The elected council voted, and they decided to accept that the Confederacy chiefs would take the lead on this initiative, and that was done a couple of weeks ago.
Why don't the Six Nations people want the elected council to represent them in this negotiation?
I don't think it's a question of whether or not they want them. Obviously, you know, there's a certain percentage of the community that votes for the elected council who would certainly be supportive of the elected council being at the table. But my understanding from the elected council is that the idea is to bring the two councils together and work as in a unified way in the community. I mean, this has been an issue since 1924 when the elected system was imposed on Six Nations. And the Confederacy chiefs their authority was removed and given to the elected council. So this is really, I think, a very positive move on behalf of the elected council to reunite the community and to recognize the jurisdiction and authority of the Confederacy, the Longhouse, in their community.
Since the blockades went up, there has been some coverage in the mainstream media about conflict between the Six Nations and the non-Aboriginal people who live in Caledonia. What's your sense of what that conflict has been like?
Well, you know, my sense of that conflict is that, you know, that this is the responsibility I see in many ways of the federal and provincial government to provide public education on these initiatives. They have, you know, they should have been there immediately as soon as there was any wind or any indication that there was going to be difficulty here and that a blockade was going to go up. They should have stepped right in and sat down with the community and organized some public information sessions so that people understood what is the historic context of this. Why is it that there is this kind of a dispute in 2006 between First Nations and Canada? You know, how does this affect their interests, which we refer to as third-party interests? You know, will those interests be respected or not? And they should have sat down with them immediately and called in people like myself and other people right across Ontario that could have come in and provided that background and that context.
Do you have a sense that these relationships can be healed now?
As long as nothing drastic happens, I understood they had a rally again last night. Although I didn't hear that there was any kind of altercation. So that's a very positive thing. But, you know, this happened in Oka, as you know, in 1990, and that community and the Oka community are still trying to heal from that. That did some serious damage within the community and between the two communities. And, I think everybody is very much, aware of that and wants to see this come to a good resolution so that everybody understands exactly what this is about. And hotheads, you know, there are a few hotheads on all sides. It's not just the Caledonian people that are upset. Certainly there are people in Six Nations that also feel pressured by this whole situation.
What do you hope will be the result of these negotiations?
My hope for it is that the government will give some serious consideration to the resolution of land claims, not only for Six Nations, but right across Canada. I mean, they've been dragging their feet on this a lot. And you need to remember, for First Nations across Canada, up until 1951, which is not that long ago, we could not hire legal counsel, we could not hire consultants, we couldn't even get a post-secondary education without being enfranchised. So it's very recent for us that we've actually been able to bring these claims to the table. And the government has been sort of giving it some lip service, but not actually spending a whole lot of time resolving. I mean, they do resolve claims. Clearly, they have in the past, but not nearly as many. There's hundreds of land claims that need to be resolved, and they don't solve very many in the context of a year. We've been waiting very patiently, I think.
As this issue evolves and unfolds, what kind of support do you hope that others in other parts of the country over here where we are on the other side of the country and in other places throughout Canada, what kind of support do you think that people can offer to the Six Nations people in this struggle?
Well, I think that the Canadian public at large can offer support by pressuring their government to deal with these claims in a fair and equitable manner. I think our own First Nations across Canada can offer support, not necessarily by going on and creating blockades, because that's not, obviously the squeaky wheel gets the grease, but that's not necessarily the best thing. But they can also pressure their provincial governments to create some processes that are more effective and more efficient for the use of the First Nations to solve these claims and to move forward in a positive way. We need territorial jurisdiction. We need to have self-government recognized in a way that's appropriate to the needs of each community. We need to have the treaty relationships where there are treaty relationships recognized and where there aren't, such as in BC and in a lot of places in BC. We need to have the need for share of resources recognized so that our First Nations can become economically self-sufficient in a way that makes sense to them. We're not saying, obviously, give us back all of Canada, because that's impossible, but we are saying that we have a right to those resources that are extracted out of Canada that will help to sustain our communities in a way that's more positive, help us to educate our children in the way we need them educated, in the way we want them educated, and help us to enter the economy on our own terms.
Well, thank you for joining us this morning, Cynthia. We appreciate you taking the time from Phoenix to speak with us.
Well, thank you, and let's all pray for a positive resolution of these issues.
Yes, absolutely. I've been speaking to Cynthia Wesley-Esquima. She is an associate professor of Aboriginal Studies at the University of Toronto and also teaches political science and history at Laurentian University in Barrie. She lives on Chippewa Georgina Island First Nation. And you are listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.